All right, we're going to continue right along with our Christian warfare series. And we began this series by looking at who it is against. And it's a very important that we know who our warfare is against, so that way we can get intelligence about them and see what their weaknesses are, their strengths are, how they work, etc., and so forth, all those things. Now, of course, we've seen the devil is our enemy, and we looked at who and what he was and how he works. And then we've seen the flesh, that old flesh. We know all about that flesh, do we not? It loves to serve itself. And then we looked at personal enemies. And you think, should a Christian have personal enemies? Well, hopefully not, but guess what? We do. And just because we are Christians, a lot of times that's why you are an enemy. Tonight, we want to look at another enemy, and that enemy is the world. The world. Now, this is a world, and it's not creation itself. You know, we don't have birds and animals trying to attack us or being our enemy, so forth like that. But go ahead and turn to John 15, please. We know God made the world, and when he made the world and all the things in it, it was good. There was nothing wrong with it, of course, till sin entered in. And then sin just messed it all up. Now, this world is not our friend. If you're a Christian, the world is not your friend. The world is something. Now, when I'm talking about the world, I'm talking about the inhabitants of the world. Like I say, it's not the creation itself. And Jesus tells us here in John, the 15th chapter, something about the world. And now you think about Jesus, and you think about what Jesus' life was, and how he conducted himself, and so forth. And then you read this, and you think, how could that be? Because we know Jesus, and in his life, and in his earthly ministry, he done everything good. He was something, he never sinned. He never did anything wrong. He was always helping people, healing people, and so forth. He was always doing good. But he tells here in John 15, chapter and verse 18, let's begin at verse 18. He tells his disciples, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love his own. But because you are not of the world, but I've chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Good news, huh? Well, it don't sound like good news, does it? It isn't good news. Verse 20, remember, the word that I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. And if they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you. And this is why they do it, for my name's sake. Because they know not him that sent me. So the world hated Jesus, and the world hated him without a cause. Because again, as you look at his life, it was one of giving, sacrificial life that he gave in his everyday living to help people, to love people, to show them kindness, to be there, to show them the way of life and not death. But yet, the world hated him. And because the world hated him, they're also going to hate us. They're going to hate us. Go ahead and 1 John, the 3rd chapter. Now, like I said, you probably think, wow, that seems very strange that the world would hate Jesus because he was such a good individual. This was God in the flesh. And yet the world hated him. And he also hates, the world also hates Christians. In 1 John, the 3rd chapter, it tells us something. As we look at this, and as we experience this, and I don't know if any of you have experienced it, I've experienced it in my life where people didn't like me just because I was a Christian, when jobs and various things. and would say things and so forth, and we won't get into that. But anyhow, the world hated me because I was a Christian. In verse John, the third chapter, in verse 13, it says to do what? Verse 13, marvel not, my brethren, if the world hates you. Marvel not. Don't think it's strange. Don't get upset about it. As Paul and Silas, you know, they was beaten and trashed and everything else, but yet they counted it, you know, a wonderful thing to suffer for Christ. And all the apostles, they considered that suffering was something good. It was something that was exciting. Well, it might not have been exciting at the time, but they were counted worthy to suffer for Christ's name. But he says, marvel not. To marvel not at that. Don't take it personally? I don't know if you can say, I guess you could. Don't take it personal. That's just the way the world is. And it's not just you that they hate. They hate every Christian. It's just the way it is. They hated Jesus, and so they're going to hate you. Now, go ahead and turn to 2 Timothy. You might think, why does the world hate me? Why? Why? Why does the world hate me? And 2 Timothy, the third chapter, Paul talks about his life here. 2 Timothy, the third chapter, let's just begin at verse 10. But thou hast fully known my doctrine, manner of life, purpose, faith, long-suffering, charity, patience, persecutions, afflictions, which came unto me at Antioch, at Iconium, at Lystra, what persecutions I endured, but out of them all the Lord delivered me. The Lord delivered him. You know, I mean, if we had to suffer like he did, I'm afraid we wouldn't fare as well as he did, as far as his attitude and outlook upon what had happened to him. But the Lord delivered him. You know, the Lord had asked him to do so many trying things, go into some particular cities that were very sin-filled. And even at Corinth, he was afraid because they were so bad there to go in there. But the Lord said, be not afraid. I've got much people there. You just go in there. I'll take care of that. You just go in there and preach the word. And that's what Paul did. But notice what he says in verse 12. He says, yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. No ifs, no ands about it. Now, like I said, the persecution back then, a whole lot more than what it is today. And if you live godly, you're going to have enemies in this world. The world is your enemy because it hates the things. It hated Jesus, the things of Jesus, his teachings, and so forth. And it's going to hate you also. So you will it's going to be a time of suffering. And if the world keeps going the way it is, I think it's going to get a lot worse. Only the Lord knows. Only the Lord knows. So the world hates us. We shouldn't marvel at it because we live godly. And it don't make sense because we live godly. They're still going to hate us and persecute us for that. Matthew, the third chapter. Now, here in the book of Matthew, in the 13th chapter, did I say third chapter? Yep. I'm sorry. Put a one in front of that, please. 13, please. I'm sorry. Here in the 13th chapter, we have the parable of the sower, and we're just going to look at the explaining of that part. And I want you to pay attention to what it says. This is helpful to us because as we go out into the world, we are to be lights in the world, and we are to shine our lights to so people can see Christ. And but that's not going to be received. You're going to see four ways it's received here. And he explains the parable of the sower beginning at verse 18 of the 13th chapter of Matthew. He says, "Hear ye therefore the parable of the sower. When anyone heareth the word of the kingdom and understandeth it not, then cometh the wicked one and catcheth away that which was sown in his heart. This is he that receiveth the seed by the wayside." So here you have a negative reaction to the hearing of the word. Satan just come in and just ruined that all up by whatever means it needed to take that person's attention away from what they had heard. Verse 20 said, "But he that receiveth the seed into stony places, the same as he that heareth the word, and anon with joy receive it, yet hath he not root in himself, but endureth for a while. For when tribulation and persecution arises because of the word, by and by he is," what, "offended." So here you have another. You have a good thing. The seed was planted, but it wasn't on good ground. And so by and by they was offended. Verse 22, "He also that received the seed among thorns is he that heareth the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful." He becometh unfruitful. The world hates us and presents to us things that will make us unfruitful. That's why it's our enemy. The world would do that. This is the third reaction here, and again, it's a negative reaction. It fell among the thorns. He heard the word, but the care of this world. Now, this world here is a different word world than what we read up there in John 15. It means age, or what's going on at the time, the ages, what's happening in the world at that time. Whatever was happening in the world at that time, what was it? The deceitfulness of riches choked the word, and he becometh unfruitful. Riches, there's nothing wrong with riches, but what was the word before that? Deceitful riches. Riches that would draw someone away from Christ. They was deceitful in that. Those hopes, the cares of the world, so forth, all made it a drawing away from the word. It was deceitful. It tricked them. It wasn't what they really thought it was going to be. But yet, and that, what did that do? What was the end result? Becomes unfruitful. The world makes us unfruitful. Now, don't get me wrong. We got to live in the world. We got to work in the world. We got to go to school. We got to do those things necessary that we do as human beings in the world. But yet there's things that will take us away from the word. And that is the deceitful things that will do that. But, so you had three negative responses, but verse 23, we got to read it. "But he that receiveth seed into the ground, good ground, is he that heareth the word and understandeth it, which also beareth fruit and bringeth forth some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. So in our Christian lives, and when we're out spreading the word, most of the time the reaction is going to be negative, according to this. Don't let that get you down. Don't let that hinder you. Don't let that make you unfruitful. Keep on planting the seed. The more seed you plant, the more crop you're going to have. If you plant a little bit of seed, then you're not going to have very much crop. So, but the thing we want to understand is the world can come in and with its deceitful riches make us unfruitful. All right? So it's the cares of the world. Now, go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes. So the world is our enemy. It hated Jesus. It's going to hate us also. We're not to marvel about that, not to get on our old little pity parties and sit down and just quit. No, did the disciples do that? Absolutely not. They powered on through the strength and power of the Lord. They continued on. If you live godly, expect the persecution. Don't let the world and its deceitfulness in many ways make you unfruitful. Now, in the book of Ecclesiastes, it's a rather long read, but I think it's well worth it. But, you know, the saying is, history seems to always repeat itself. Now that would be good if it was good things, wouldn't it? If something good in history happened, for it to repeat something good, that would be great. But a lot of times, most of the time, it's bad. And, but we say that, but yet, what do? We do the same thing. We want to turn right around, and I don't know why man just wants to continue to do the same thing. Even though we've seen it in the past history, a bad thing, yet we think, I don't think it's going to be like that. I think I can do it better, or they can do it better, and it's not going to be like that. So we don't learn from history when we need to learn from history. We need to look at history and see the things that were done wrong and don't repeat them. Don't repeat those things again. And in here, we have a man who gives us instructions because he knows all about it. You know, I don't have to wonder about it. I don't have to think about it. I just have to look at what this, under inspiration of God, what he says about the world. And I can look at what he says and says, okay, he says not to do that. Then Mike don't need to get the attitude, well, I'm better than him. I think I can do it. But Mike needs to listen to what he says. Now, here in Ecclesiastes, the second chapter, Solomon's going to talk about things about the world. And I want you to listen to him. Now, again, this is under inspiration of God. Verse 1 of the second chapter, he says, I said in my heart, go to now, I will prove thee with myrrh, therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity. Vanity simply means emptiness. You know, many times there's nothing wrong with pleasures in the world. But when we get those pleasures before God, then there's a problem. Then there's a problem. There has to be a balance there. Verse 2, he said, I said of laughter it is mad, and of mirth what doeth it? I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainted my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was the good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. So he's doing an investigation about, I will prove myself with myrrh and enjoy the pleasures of this world. So he's going to investigate how that is. He's going to partake in all of that, and he's going to give us the outcome. Okay? Verse 4, I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. I planted me trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me pools of water to water therewith, and the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and I had servants born in my house also. I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered also me silver and gold and particular treasures of kings and of provinces. I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great. And I increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was the portion of all my labor. Then, verse 11. Then I looked at all the works that my hands have wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. So he had it all. He got it all. He experienced it all. And as he looked back at it, what did he say? It's vanity. It's empty. Now, there's nothing wrong with building your house and having things. There's nothing wrong with those things. But when that becomes your sole desire of your heart, of getting of things, and leaving the Lord out, then that's empty. It's empty because you're working for nothing. Oh, I'm laboring. Yeah, you're laboring, but what's going to be the end result? What's he said? And there was no profit under the sun. Let's continue. Verse 12. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? Then I saw that wisdom exceeded folly as far as light exceeded darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And myself perceived also that one event happened to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it has happened to the fool, so it happened even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this is also vanity. For as though remembrance of the wise more than the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the days to come shall be all what? Forgotten. Forgotten. And how dieth the wise man as the fool? The same. We all die. We all die. Therefore, what happened? Verse 17. Therefore, I hated life, because the work that I wrought under the sun is grievous unto me. Why was it grievous? He enjoyed it. He had pleasure in doing it at first, there he said. But as he looked back into the end result of all of it, there was no profit under the sun, and it was a grievous thing then. For all is vanity and vexation of spirit. It's all emptiness. Verse 18. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun. Why would you think he would hate it? Why would you hate it? Because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who know whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. All that pleasure that he had in doing all that work now was grievous. Now his heart was in despair. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in quality. Yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows, and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh no rest in the night. This is also vanity. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. That also I saw that it was from the hand of God. For who can eat, or who else can hasten hereunto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail, together to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of the spirit. So as Solomon's got it all, as Solomon had all the pleasures, and as he looked back upon all of that, he became grievous because, man, I look what I've done. Look at this. Temples and pools and look at all this. And I'm going to die, and who's going to get it? Is he going to take care of it like I did? Is he just going to let it go to nothing? You know, that's going to be a reflection on me. As he started thinking about all this stuff, he'd seen all that toil was emptiness, vanity. His conclusion was, you know, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. If anything, if the world takes us away from the Lord, it's never worth it. Again, we need homes. We need vehicles. We need these things. That's how we get around in the world and do things in the world. But when those become something that takes us away from the Lord, then it's wrong. It's sin. So the world hates us. It hated Jesus. Marvel not at that. If you live godly, hey, you're going to see persecution. The world can make you unfruitful. Make you unfruitful. You know, the world paints a pretty picture, does it not? If you get this, you'll be happy. You'll be joyous. If you do this, that'd be awesome. The best thing you could do in your life is to do this or to do that. It always paints a picture that's something that it's not. Because what? Too many people get everything like Solomon, and yet they're empty. They're always looking. If you look at the interviews with movie stars, and they're never happy. They're always wanting the next movie, or they're wanting the next this. They're always wanting whatever's next, whatever's the best. It never ends in this world, and that will never end. Never, ever end. So we have an enemy, the world. Go ahead and turn to 1 Corinthians. We'll wrap this up. 1 Corinthians, the 3rd chapter, please. The world is not our friend. Like I said, we live here. We got to do what we got to do. And there's nothing wrong with it. The Lord doesn't expect anything less of us. He expects us to work, to provide for a family. He expects all those things to do that. The world can make us also suffer loss of reward. Can make us lose reward. 1 Corinthians, the 3rd chapter, and verse 11. It says, for other foundation can no man lay than is laid, which is Jesus Christ. The best foundation it is. Now, if any man build upon this foundation, gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble. So you have different building stone, different building products on this Jesus, on Jesus Christ. And you see gold, silver, precious stones, and you see hay, wood, and stubble. You see some good. And you see some bad. Why? Why is bad? Why is some of those products bad? Why? Verse 13. Because every man's work shall be made manifest. For the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire. And the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. And if any man's work abide which he hath built upon, he shall receive a reward. And if any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. So what are we building? If we're building on the foundation of things of the world, what's going to happen to the world at the end of the world? He's going to destroy it all with fire. So if it's wood, hay, and stubble, if you're building with that, what's going to happen to your rewards? It's going to be burned up. It'll be burned up. But gold, silver, and precious stones, those will stand the test of fire. So the world isn't our friend, isn't our one that we should be partners with, so to speak, engulf our life into the world because it hates us. And it don't want good for us. We just might as well not marvel at it, understand that, get a grip on that. It wants to make us unfruitful, and there's no true lasting joy in the things of this world. Now, 1 John, the 5th chapter. Now, the world is our enemy because it hated Jesus. It's going to hate you. It persecuted Jesus. It's going to persecute you. It wants to make you unfruitful. He wants to trick you with certain joys of the world that will simply draw you away and suffer you loss of reward. But even though all that is true, as verse 15 of the 1 Corinthians 3:15 says, if any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved. 1 John 5:4 says, For whosoever is born of God overcometh the world. And this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. Who is he that overcometh the world but he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God? This world is our enemy, but we will overcome the world, not because of ourselves and the strength that we have within ourselves, but because of our faith and that we believe in Jesus Christ as the Son of God. 1 John 4:4, ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because why? Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. This world, it can take your joy by promising you things that you think is going to make you joyous, but then you'll find out, like Solomon later, that it didn't, and that it was all emptiness. But they can't take your salvation. Never be able to take your salvation, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. All right, we'll finish, wrap that up for that one. So the world, personal enemies, the flesh, Satan. Let's see how many more we got. Two more. So good Lord willing, we'll continue right along. So we're looking at our enemies, gaining information about them so that we can better be ready for the fight. And then we're going to find out how to fight, what we need to do to fight, how to gain the victory, and so forth. So, Saul, please stand.